Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday, don't you know, here on WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We have a beer connoisseur in the house today, actually two at the moment, ready to talk with you about beer. We can talk Bock, lagers, stouts, ales, the complexities of each, and why that glass of suds tastes so darn good. We can also get into the latest beer news and beer events. Craig Gravina is here. He's the founder of the Albany Ale Project and author of Upper Hudson Valley Beer, A History of Brewing in the Region. Now, we welcome your calls and your questions and your comments at 800-348-2551. Here's your chance to talk to a real live beer expert. Usually, they get top dollar. Today, Craig is working for free. It's 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at WAMCVoxPop, or go to Facebook if you wish, facebook.com/WAMCRadio. But again, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. Craig Gravina, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you here. And whenever I mention beer, we always seem to get another visitor in the studio. And so our old buddy Joe Donahue is here to try some beer, too.
Thank you very much for the kind invitation.
You know, I appreciate you pitching in for the station to help us try these things.
I do what I can. I will say one thing, that Craig, not only being an expert, but has written one of the best books about beer.
It's a great book.
In our region.
Yeah.
And,
thank you.
It is, it's just fantastic. And he went on like this, I don't know, how many stops did you do on the tour? Like 800 stops on the tour?
Yeah.
And
I got to work on that getting paid part of it, too.
Yeah.
That's not working out very well.
Give that up. They just want you to come in with the beer. But I saw many of his demonstrations and his talks, and he's just great. So it's really good stuff. So you are in very good hands with a great guest.
Absolutely. And the last time we were here, there was the competition. You were talking about the
1780 Beer Challenge.
Right. And that went well, and you had fun.
We did.
You got violently ill, but not because of the beer.
No. Or because of drinking it or making it or any of it. It was just a really bad cold.
A cold.
Yeah, that's about all I remember.
You know what they say about colds? If you have some stout, it helps your colds.
What a segue.
You see how I did that?
What a segue.
I am a semi-professional broadcaster.
Feed a cold, starve a fever,
stout
a cold.
Yes, right.
Okay.
I have indeed brought in a variety of stout. Yesterday was St. Patrick's Day, so I thought I'd come in and talk a little bit about
I'm just sobering up now.
I know. Oh, right? It's not still St. Patrick's Day?
No.
So I decided to bring in some stout, specifically Guinness-made stout, to talk about St. Patrick's Day and Guinness's role as being sort of the ubiquitous St. Patrick's Day beer.
Right.
And they were kind enough to have produced a new line of historically inspired porters and stouts.
So, but are they historically accurate?
Well, no.
Oh, well.
That's okay, though. Let me get into the difference between a porter and stout.
Okay.
At first. Today, if you're a brewer, there are specific style guidelines that you want to follow. That's kind of a new idea. Way back when in the 19th century, especially, actually even into the 18th century, porter and
Joe is also our roadie here
yes.
today.
Mic you a little bit. Yeah, there you go.
So porter and stout were really they're variations of the same thing.
Yeah.
Guinness was a big porter brewer. You had big porter breweries in both Dublin and London. And Guinness is obviously one of the most famous ones out of there now. So basically what it was is that you had porter, and then you had stout and other varieties that they would make. And stout was really just a stronger version of porter. So, you know, hey, this is a porter and this is a stout porter. And then eventually the stout part of stout porter went away and it just became stout.
Uh-huh. Right. All right, so what do I get to try first? Let's cut to the middleman.
So let's try the porter first.
All right, so I'll try.
I haven't had any of these either, so
okay.
I don't know.
But so this is Guinness Dublin Porter.
Yeah. So what makes these a little bit inaccurate is that they're lower in alcohol than they would have been in the 19th century. This one's about 3.8. It would have been probably closer to 5 or 6%.
Okay. And why did they do that?
Well, because Guinness is traditionally, nowadays, a little bit lower in alcohol. They do make a few beers, and it depends on where you are in the world. But Guinness Draft is, it's like 4.5%. So they're trying to stay in that range.
Okay.
But, you know, it wouldn't have been unheard of in the 19th century to have a 10% stout. The other thing that makes them a little inaccurate is that they're not soured. So it was common to brew beer, or brew porter specifically, and they, some of the pale ale brewers did this too, and then age it in wood. And when you age beer in wood, it gets exposed to Brettanomyces, which is a wild yeast, and it gives it kind of a tangy funk.
Interesting.
Later in the 19th century, they stopped aging all of the beer and then would just blend aged beer back into new beer to give it that flavor.
Yeah.
None of this beer, I just sampled one, and none of this beer has that flavor. So that's really one of the big differences between porter and stout today and porter and stout in the 19th century, is it doesn't have that sort of funkification.
No.
Unless somebody's making a Brett stout.
Okay, and there are craft brewers that will go that extra mile here in this country?
Not necessarily to do it historically, but it is, you know, everything and anything is going in beer today.
Open season.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
Now, I'm sorry, so am I in the right order here?
You are in the right order.
All
so
right.
You were trying the porter first.
All right.
Okay, this is the Guinness Dublin Porter, 3.8% alcohol by volume.
Give it a swig.
I did. Lacking in body.
Well, now, there's a lot of people are thinking that the stouts are going to be like...
meat and potatoes beer.
Meat and potatoes beer, like Guinness Draft is today.
Yeah.
Which is the ubiquitous St. Patrick's Day beer. That's actually a pretty recent invention. What ends up happening is Guinness changes their attenuation rate sometime at the beginning of the 1950s. And attenuation is basically the amount of sugar that yeast will eat to produce alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So the more sugar they eat, the drier the beer. The less, the sweeter. So that's where you get the dry Irish stout.
And this maybe I'm wrong, but this certainly does not taste overly sweet.
No.
This is nice. I mean, it's crisp.
Yeah, and the next thing that they did in the early 1960s is they started adding nitrogen to it, and that's where you get that body, that the Guinness, the cascade they get.
Yeah, I don't like the velvety tiny bubbles like the Boddingtons.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem real to me.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste. I'm not a big fan of it either. I actually prefer beers like this.
Yeah,
it's cool that you can put a quarter on the head and it'll hold it.
Yeah,
you do that?
I mean, yes.
Yeah, entertain your friends.
that's a bar trick.
Oh, here comes Joe again. Put away your quarters.
Your money is really dirty too. So
yeah.
Think about that.
No, it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. But there is a new, not new. This has been around for a while. But I noticed in the grocery store there's this Sam Adams Nitro.
Yeah.
And that has the widget in it so that it's a can, and then when you press the down and open up the can, it releases the
so like the Boddingtons cans.
Right.
It's just like Guinness. That's the new thing. I mean, I don't know if it's new.
But
a lot of places are doing it.
But to Ray's point is that you get this big foamy head and there is no carbonation or bubbles.
Flat.
And it tastes flat.
Yeah.
Okay, well, while we're on the topic of stout, and by the way, the number here is 800-348-2551. Hang in there, Ken in Ticonderoga. We will get to you momentarily. While we're on the topic here, and before we try our next Guinness sampling, how does a stout / porter differ from a bitter? I love Boddingtons.
Right. So it's really the roast of the malt. I mean, there's... A brewer would tell you that there's 1,000 different differences between stout and bitter, and it doesn't really have anything to do that much with the brewing process. It's the ingredients that you make with it. I mean, it's the difference between an Alfredo sauce and a red sauce.
Yeah.
So stouts and porters have a lot of brown malt. They have a lot of heavily roasted black malt, roasted barley, and a bitter's going to have more caramel malt in it. It's going to have it's a lighter grist. They usually have, well, it depends on the kind of beer, but bitters are called bitter because they're bitter. So they have different kinds of hops in them to make them more bitter.
Yeah.
You know, IPAs have even more than that. But when we get down to the last beer, that's kind of interesting too. It's a West Indian, I think it's West
Indies. Yeah, West Indies.
West Indies porter. So we've all heard the story about IPA, you know, it was originally sent to India.
India Pale Ale.
India Pale Ale.
Correct.
Well, there's actually more porter sent to India than there was pale ale.
Really?
Yeah. Because unless you were an officer or part of the gentry, you couldn't afford it. You could afford porter. So
why would it be more expensive? Because of the hops?
It was a lot of it had to do with how much it was being made and what it was being made out of. Porter has a long sort of tradition of sort of repurposing old beer back into it, like I was saying, that tang. So you can get more bang for your buck out of brewing porter. And when I talk about not today, not in the craft beer world. You know, they'll make a single porter and that's what they'll sell.
Right.
In the 19th century, when you're talking about these gigantic breweries in London and Dublin, like Guinness and Barclay Perkins, they're really looking to get the, you know, be as efficient as they possibly can. And, you know, it's all about the bottom line. It's all about the dollars. So
our number to call here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Craig Gravina, and we are sampling some, we're starting today by sampling some gifts from Guinness. We just tried the Guinness Dublin Porter, and what's next on our list?
I think it's called Guinness Original, Genuine Quality Stout. So this is supposed to be what Guinness was in the 19th century, and I think you're actually probably better off if you really want to taste what Guinness was like, at least maybe in the early to mid 19th century or 20th century, you'd be better off getting a beer called Guinness Foreign Extra Stout. It's a lot higher in alcohol. It's about 7.5%. This is only 4.2%. So what's the difference between this and the other porter? What do you think?
Hold on.
I think it has more body to it. A little more body to it.
More of a chocolate note.
Yeah, it's richer. It's richer than the other one.
I like this to some extent.
Yeah, I can taste a lot of that chocolate in there.
Yeah.
Well, this is the first time you've tried it?
Yeah, I've not had any of these beers. So I was saving them special for the show.
It's a special show. Now, let's take a break here before things go further awry. 800-348-2551. Ken and Ty Conderoga, you'll be first. We'll take a break and back to the phones on a Vox Pop.
Support for WAMC comes from Field Goods, working with Hudson Valley farmers to deliver weekly subscriptions of local produce year-round to workplaces and community locations. Supports small farms and healthy eating, field-goods.com. Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, celebrating Easter with milk, dark, white chocolate bunnies, and hand-packed baskets, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville. UncleSamsCandy.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preserveNYS.org. And Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts, blueherondining.com/catering.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. It's a Food Friday. Today we talk beer with beer historian Craig Gravina, who is the author of Upper Hudson Valley Beer, A History of Brewing in the Region, which is a great book, lavishly illustrated, and apparently has been quite lucrative for Craig.
Not so much?
Okay, well, certainly your appearances on this program have not been lucrative. They have been
for
us.
All good beer writing,
right,
yes.
Right.
You do bring beer, and we've tried two from Guinness, and these were promotional releases. They're not long-term releases,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Guinness is actually pretty tight-lipped with their brewing records. I have a very good friend who's just in town. He's a sort of a really well-known European beer historian. He's looked at every other major. His name's Ron Pattinson.
And why don't you bring him to the show?
He is in Colonial Williamsburg doing a series of lectures on historical brewing down there.
All right, well, you'll do.
Yeah. always the bridesmaid, never the bride, right? I completely forgot what I was going to say.
So Guinness is very tight with their brewing records.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
You only had two sips. What's up with this?
It's 4.8%. So, okay. Ron has gone, you know, he's been to Fuller's and he's been to all of the, you know, major European breweries, and Guinness says, nope, sorry, can't come in and take a look at what we got.
Ha! Huh.
It's dogging him because he really wants to do that. Yeah.
Can you get a spy in there?
Now I'm going to ask a question that is either going to be incredibly interesting and insightful, or we'll bring the show to a complete halt.
Well, we'll just go to the phones.
Right.
Ken and Ty Conderoga's waiting.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead.
All right, so the other night, it was a little while ago, I was watching The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and he had a petition campaign going because apparently Guinness made an announcement that they will no longer be using fish bladders in the making of their beer.
Right.
All right. So now the question is that true? How did they use fish bladders, and why, for goodness sakes, I signed the petition, by the way.
Okay.
But why would you then stop doing that if that made the product that had been successful for so long?
All right, what do you do with it, first of all?
So what the fish bladder stuff is, it's called isinglass, and it is a fining agent. So it's actually not made with it. It's filtered.
It's a filter,
and it's not something like Guinness invented. It's something that's they've been using in brewing for
like
really 300 years. Yeah.
Is that allowed to be used here in the stateside?
Sure.
Right. So it's filtered through a fish bladder, and then later filtered through a human bladder.
Right. It's like the stuff is like ground up, and they put it in there, and basically what ends up happening is I don't really know the science behind this. The proteins bind to the. To the isinglass, and then they fall out of suspension. I know that's how Irish moss works, which is another non-fishy filter, traditional filter. You see it a lot in cask ales, actually.
Really?
Yeah. You don't see it too much in the United States because a lot of beer is filtered through a regular, modern commercial filter.
Sure. So I assume that's what they will replace the fish bladders with, a modern filtration system.
I have no idea.
Okay. All right.
Well, it got some
baboon bladder.
Beer got some bad press on that not too long ago. And it's really a response to the bad press.
Okay.
That why are you using fish bladders? Because it wasn't very well.
This is
widely known.
Right.
This line of conversation is frightening me. Let's go to the phones. Ken in Ticonderoga. Ken, you're on.
Hey, guys. Fred, Ray. Hey. Yeah. Isinglass is kind of like the yoga mats of Subway sandwiches.
I don't make that.
It didn't have to be in there, but
Oh, I see.
I see.
Yeah, okay. So if it's in there, then snap it out. Make everybody happy.
They have been using it for like 200 years.
Right.
So
So what's up, Ken?
Yeah, one announcement: the Glens Falls Brewfest this weekend. A lot of Adirondack beer is going to be in there. Common Roots out of South Glens Falls, Adirondack out of Lake George.
Nice.
Paradox out of Scroon Lake.
I heard Paradox is excellent.
They are very good.
Cool. Very good beer. Great signage. Four to eight at the Queensbury Hotel in Glens Falls.
Not that you're keeping track at all, Joe.
Johnny on the spot there.
Hey, Ken, thanks a lot for that.
And a question.
Go.
Denali. Fred, do you know anybody who's going to be jumping on a new Denali hop strain out of the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, it's Craig. Do you know anybody who'll jump on that new hop strain?
No. Okay. What? Ask your question again. I heard Denali and I thought of the park.
There's a new hop strain from Hopsteiner out of the Pacific Northwest, and it's huge. They're like, golf ball size. Nuggets. So I was just curious if you knew anything about it, knew anybody was going to, put it into a beer.
Locally. Sounds like George DePiro is already on this.
Everybody's going to use it. That's the way. Every time that a new trend comes up in beer, somebody jumps on. Like we were talking about the nitro. It's not new, but I guarantee that whatever that is, you'll be seeing that in 6 months.
Hey, Ken, have fun at the beer fest.
Oh, one more question.
Go ahead.
And the beer historian. Anybody around here doing beers where they do the dark, heavy, high alcohol beer, and then do a second beer off of the same hops, and then a small beer. And the small beer is what they used to feed kids so they didn't die from drinking bad water.
Yeah, we've talked about this in the past, small beers.
That's actually called, that technique is called party guiling, and that's actually how you'd end up with stout and porter. So your highest running would be your stout, and your lowest one would have been your porter, not necessarily your small beer. But the key with party guiling in the 19th century was it wasn't just making three or four beers out of one mash. It was that they would then go back and blend those worts, those first runnings and second runnings, back together in different proportions so that they could make like six or seven different kinds of beer.
Huh.
And it's again like what we were talking about. It's all about the efficiency. They're trying to be as efficient as they possibly can. In the United States, in the early 18th century or 19th century and late 18th century, before industrial brewing gets really big, you see that earlier version of it's just three beers coming out because they're nowhere near to the scale that the London and Dublin breweries were at. So they didn't need to be that efficient.
Ken, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Craig Gravina and our own Joe Donahue here today as we taste a few beers. And let's try this Guinness West Indies Porter.
Yeah. So I was talking earlier that there's more porter sent to India than IPA or pale ale. So this is the new version, sort of an homage to that. So this is the strongest one in this series.
Oh, I like
6%.
This best.
Now this would probably be more like 7.5% back then, and it's going to have a lot more hops in it because they're using the hops as a preservative.
But also just the body, it feels like it has some substance. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Joe?
I still like the second one better, but this is very good.
I don't know. That's a toss-up between those two. I like the hops in it. And the reason that you're noticing the body is because the beers are getting stronger, which means they're using more grain.
Right.
So they're giving it more backbone.
Yeah. That's a good beer. And this will only be available for a very brief time.
I went over to Oliver's and picked this up about a week ago, and they only had one pack left. Now, I'm not 100% sure when these came out. And they may bring them back out again. I think it depends on how well they sell.
Okay.
And I'm probably the only one in the universe that buys them because it's historically relevant.
Yes.
Let's go to Kurt in Nassau. Kurt, you're on.
You're giving us false hope here. You're talking about strong beer. I want to reminisce about my trip to Munich a few years ago. I landed on the same day. I looked at a newspaper, and that night they were advertising the Stark Beer Fest at the Levenbroi Keller, the Lohenbräu brewery facility. And in addition to drinking strong beer, they had strong beer drinkers contests where they had people from the audience lifting kegs of beer.
Ah.
Can you believe that?
I can totally believe that.
Stout Germanic men with big chests lifting up kegs.
Well,
that's my family tree, as a matter of fact.
In their lederhosen with the brass band playing in the background.
Right.
You know, and I love the idea of local and everything, but, you know, there's so many wonderful German beers. They're readily available. You don't have to worry about pig bladders. The first food purity laws because of beer in Bavaria.
Well, that's
treat yourself and have a nice German beer.
That's,
I agree.
That's kind of funny because we were talking about this over the weekend, and one of the misconceptions about the Rheinheitsgebot, which is the German beer purity law,
right,
is people say,
15,
oh, 16. well, Germany only uses the purest ingredients, and that's not necessarily true. The law only applied to Bavaria.
Yes.
Until about 1900.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so
and I believe the Prussians adopted it for the rest of Germany.
Yes,
yeah.
That's where you get Hefeweizens, and because those are all adjuncts, and those are all the things that you're not supposed to use within the German purity law. But I did bring in a variety of Bock's as well, because it like I said, tomorrow is Stark Bierzeit. So,
right.
Which is like you were saying, it's sort of Oktoberfest's little brother who happens to be bigger than the older brother.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a pause between the Maibock Fest, which is in a few more weeks.
Yes. Well,
thank you, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's my favorite style of beer in the world. Kurt,
there you go.
Thanks for the call.
Wiedersehen.
So do you gentlemen, would you like to try some Bock? Would you like to shift gear?
I don't know,
here?
Joe.
I'm in.
Okay.
All right. I'm
fine.
Totally in.
Okay.
So, what is the festival? Does that come on the same day every year, or is it that weekend, or how does that work?
I think it falls. I don't know if it's the exact same day, but
I'm asking because does it have anything to do with St. Joseph's Day, which is tomorrow?
That's the baby aspirin day.
Yes, right.
That's after St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick had his feast day on Thursday yesterday. St. Joseph has feast day tomorrow on the 19th.
Fair enough.
It may actually have something to do with that because the whole tradition of the strong beer comes out of the Lenten tradition. So basically, the first beer we're going to try is it's called Paulaner Salvator.
Okay, I've had this,
and it is sort of the prototypical Bock. And basically, what ended up happening was you had these Middle Ages and Renaissance era monks who give up food for Lent.
Sure.
Right. So not just like giving up the cookies, not just giving up whatever. They're giving up the food. So what they end up doing is brewing this strong beer to get them through Lent. So this is Stark Bierzeit, is sort of a celebration of that whole idea of celebrating the strong beer sort of trickles down to the masses and it gets adopted like Oktoberfest.
Have you had the Celebrator, Eyinger Celebrator?
Well, you know anything. That's the thing about Polaner, the T-O-R at the end of the name is basically trademarked now. So no one can actually make a Salvatore beer unless you're Polaner. But everybody else jumped
Optimator
on board.
And,
Optimator.
Yeah, and, delicious beer, by the way.
And Trogs just put one out called...
I saw that in the store.
Oh, it's brand new, and it's a Hellesbach, and it's good. I think it's called Cultivator.
And that's American, right?
Yeah, they're Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's get this going.
Okay, and
this
our producer has arrived for a sip, so let's
so
get an extra glass.
We got to do four.
All right, 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to the phones while Craig is pouring. Craig Gravina is our guest. Let's go to Ryan and Beacon. Ryan.
Yes, I am calling about non-alcoholic beer since we've been focusing so much on all the varieties that you guys seem to love. Those of us that can't drink alcohol but still love the flavor of beer, why are there not stronger and better conceptions in the non-alcoholic beer market?
Well, this is a great question. And for a while, there were several mass-produced, maybe they still are, Buckler and some of these other ones.
They are, right.
Yeah, and so I must confess I never tried one, so I don't know how good they are. But, Craig, maybe you can answer that question.
Well, I think it's, unfortunately, a matter of economics. I don't think it has anything to do with the quality of them. I just don't think that they sell at the same level.
How do you remove the alcohol?
Good question. I have no idea.
You have no idea.
But, you know, it was funny. I was at FX Matt's, the Saranac Brewery, on Monday. They were kind enough to bring us out and let us go through their records and gave us a really phenomenal tour. And they were showing us some Prohibition era records where the brewery was still brewing. And they it was in their records that they were de-alcoholizing India Pale Ale. And
how do you do it?
I don't know. A brewer would probably have a better idea of how to do it than I would. Let me pass this over to Joe here real quick.
So that's a great question. What is your favorite, Ryan?
My favorite is a Klaus Haller out of Germany.
Yeah.
And you can't find it all over the place. And it's, you know, it's like a real shame because then you're stuck with Bucknell or not at all or anything for that matter. You're stuck with nothing. But, you know, it seems like if somebody really came out with a great tasting non-alcoholic beer, there would be a much better margin than just throwing some stuff on, you know, on the shelf.
Yeah.
I mean, Beck's makes a non-alcoholic beer.
Yes, I remember
beer.
That. Yeah, is that any good?
Yeah, that's actually it's quite good. It's a little on the light side.
Well, I think their alcohol beer, at least stateside, is a little on the light side as well.
Uh-huh.
Beck's beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe it's similar. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. All right, so, prost.
Here's a great story about Polaner. I was at, remember Schultz's Hofbrau?
Sure.
Up on Warner's Lake?
Oh, one of my favorite places. They had a Rottweiler that sat by the fireplace. Yeah.
I went in there one time.
No, really? And you drink
the Rottweiler maybe, by the fireplace.
Maybe 21 or 22 when I went in there and I walked up to the bar.
Yeah, right.
And there's this guy sitting there drinking and I walked in and I said, can I have a Polaner? And this guy looked at me, and he was obviously Schultz, and he said, it's not Polaner, it's Polaner.
Yeah.
And I have never said it any other way since then. So
that was a great place.
Yeah, yeah, that was neat.
All right, so here we go. This is the Polaner.
Prost. I don't even know if that's the right way to say it, but we've had a lot of German German beer callers as of yet.
Bray sets the tone.
I love this. Mm-hmm. This is great. Mm-hmm. This is a delicious beer.
I may have bought two bottles of this and had one last night. I may have done that.
That is just so good.
Yeah, that's very
good. The Germans know what they're doing. Bottom line.
I got to talk about my next one.
Okay. Well, you know, okay, this brings back memories.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you.
So Bock beer brewing is actually a pretty good tradition in the United States. Most German lager breweries made it. You know, they'd made their Pilsner and what we would call a Helles lager today. And the cream ales you saw, and this, but Bock beer has kind of always been around, and not maybe 5 years ago, Genesee out in Rochester released a beer that, you know, all the craft beer snobs you know, are rolling in their graves at this point. But it really does have a pretty good following, and I actually think it's a darn good beer.
This beer?
This beer right here. So
this
it
is not this is not 5 years. This goes back many years.
It did. They just re-released it about 5 years ago. Yeah.
You mean this was out of circulation for a while?
This was out of circulation for a while.
God.
Yes.
I remember drinking this at least 30 years ago. At least 30 years ago.
That's what I'm talking about. That long-standing American brewing tradition.
Jenny Bock. Now, let me ask you about the brewing. Is this, in fact, an authentic Bock beer? I always wondered that.
Yeah, it's a strong lager. That's all it needs to be. I mean, really. Traditionally, Bocks come out in the springtime. You get Doppelbocks, which are, I think that's what the Salvatore is. It's actually a Doppelbock. It's a little bit stronger. But, you know, anything for Bock isn't a kind of beer. It's a category of beer.
It's a way of life. Really.
Right, yeah.
pour a Jenny Bock in the lovely green can with the yellow flowers and the goat.
And the goat. Ready? Everybody listen.
Here we go.
Oh,
here
man. That is great.
All right. While you're pouring, we'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
Support for WAMC comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Sutter Meats, King Street, Northampton, providing fresh, local, pasture-raised beef, pork, and lamb. Additional house-made items include rotisserie chickens, bone broths, bacon jam, and handmade sausages. SutterMeats.com. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grant Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, educating children pre-K through grade 12 and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday. Ray Graff here, joined today by Craig Gravina, and we talk beer. Our buddy Joe Donahue has miraculously stayed with us for the entire program. If you keep feeding him little bits of beer.
And he's getting quieter, too.
Yeah.
Stick around.
He's got his eyes closed.
Yeah. So you have opened an old classic, Jenny Bock.
Jenny Bock.
And so now we just had the Polliner Salvatore, which is delicious Doppelbock.
Yeah.
Let's try this.
It's not as sweet.
You know, it's darn good.
Yeah.
It holds up. You don't like?
That's great.
No, I love it.
No, it's a really, and it's refreshing.
Right. You know, and it's, you know, American, you know, big American breweries kind of get some, they get their knocks. But it's a solid beer. I actually really like it.
All right, I'm with you.
Excellent.
All right, let's do a couple of quick emails and then back to the phones here. This one's from Jamie. The Black Lager, Black Larger is my favorite everyday beer. The stout must be off nitrogen taps and qualify as a food group. I think you should install one in the studio for research purposes, of course.
Here.
Jamie, you might be onto something there. This one is from Tom, from Barley Hops and Grapes. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that the beer is boiled to remove the alcohol after fermentation and before carbonation.
That would work.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. Back to the phones we go, and Fred and Hurley. Fred.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Excellent.
Good day. I have a question, regarding Guinness Stout in particular. It's one of the only beers that my body really appreciates, and I don't drink an awful lot of beer, but I find that at certain times some batches are gassier than other batches. They produce more gas in your body, kind of thing.
That's me. Generally.
I was wondering about
that. All right.
I've also I've experienced something called sick day from Long Trail up in Vermont.
Yeah.
And which was actually pretty good. But anyhow, I was wondering, you know, what causes the difference in the batches?
Well, I mean, that would come down to the specific brewery. I know that there are some breweries that will bottle condition, or they'll add a little sugar into their beers that haven't been pasteurized, and a little bit of that yeast will eat up any excess oxygen in the bottle itself to prevent oxidation and
keep it longer.
Yeah, what makes beer the level? I mean, different styles of beer are carbonated at different levels depending on the style. Like an IPA is going to be carbed at a different level than, say, a Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the brewery, and I think it depends on the kind of beer that you're drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's Guinness Stout. It's the only one that I hardly ever get a headache. You know what I mean? It's
from like, drinking it, from. Are you talking about like Guinness Draft, like what you would get at a bar?
No, I hate Guinness Draft.
Okay, you're actually
it's
talking
like drinking
about
drinking water. That's like drinking water.
Yeah,
you know?
Guinness. You're talking about Guinness Extra, the one that comes in the bottle with the yellow label.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Fred. Thanks for the call. Let's go over to Gary in Gloversville. Gary.
Yes, you mentioned you've been talking about Guinness, and I haven't heard him mention Guinness Extra Stout, which I just bought. Was that mentioned earlier?
We just mentioned it.
We knew you were going to ask about it, so we got it in. What would you like to know about it?
I was just wondering I have a bottle, and first of all, I can't find the percent alcohol in the bottle at all, and I've looked it over about three times.
My guess is it's probably about 4%.
Okay.
Not very strong.
No, it's not. That's why. So beer has what's called gravity, you know, and that's how a lot of home brewers will know, how strong their beer is going to be.
Yeah.
And Guinness's specific gravity is actually fairly low. So that's why you can make a black and tan and it will float on top of another.
Right.
And it all has to do with how much alcohol is in the beer. And
well, one thing I found, it's a lot stronger than the regular stout, which to me tastes watery, which is similar to the Guinness Draft. But
well, if you're looking at the like foreign extra stout, which came available in the United States maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that's about 7.5%. And I don't know offhand what Guinness extra stout, what the ABV is. I mean, the one that they have here, which is the Guinness original, is
3-something,
is 4.2.
Well, 4.2.
So maybe it's 5-6%. I mean, it could be higher. I'm not 100% sure on that.
And one more thing I had to say is the Guinness is good, but every time I go to a different beer, which is not local, I still go back to, believe it or not, Saranac Black and Tan.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And Genesee Bock. I definitely go with those.
It's very tasty.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Thanks, Gary.
Excellent.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. Craig Gravina is here, along with Joe Donahue and Ray Graff and you at home. So that was good. I thought the Jenny Bock was, it stood up pretty well to its German counterpart.
All right. Do we want to try the last?
Sure.
The big boy?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
This comes from Schmaltz.
Ah.
It's a local brew up in Clifton Park, and Shelby up there was kind enough to give me a growler full.
All right.
No cans, a full growler of their Bock Bock.
Okay.
Which is an imperial, it's an American imperial Bock.
What is an imperial Bock? How do you get that designation?
Well, it's really strong. It's about 9.5%, and then it's aged in bourbon barrels. And it's not available right now. It will be available in May.
Okay.
So make a trip up. If you've never been up to
Schmaltz Brewery, okay.
It's a really cool place. They do a great tour, and they've got a great tasting room.
So the imperial designation just means more alcohol? Like, for instance, Sam Smith's Imperial Stout is a stronger stout?
It does today. It used to mean, basically, it was beer that was brewed in England and sent to the Russian imperial court. And there's this myth that beer needed to be strong so it could survive the trip to the Baltic states. But it's actually not a very long trip. And it's, you know, if the beer froze, then everything else is going to freeze in the water too. It was strong because, you know, imperial courts in general can afford to pay for more expensive things. And like we were talking earlier, the stronger a beer, the more expensive it is
right.
to make and then to sell. So that's where the term really comes from. And nowadays it's sort of thrown around as anything that's, you know, in that 8-10% range.
All right, so this is from Schmaltz. It is a Bock Bock Imperial Bock beer. Let's have a look.
Bourbon.
Get to say Bach three times. That's good.
Bach, Bach,
but
Bach,
get
Bach.
It, Bach, Bach. Like a chicken.
Right.
Yeah. Cute.
Schmaltz. Schmaltz is.
Make it a Doppelbach.
Schmaltz is chicken fat. There is no chicken fat, I believe, in this.
Okay. Looks good.
You can talk to Deanna. She'll tell you all about the chicken fat.
No, we've discussed it. She keeps several different types of fat on hand at all time.
So do I.
Well, there you go. All right, let's try this. Bock Bock from Bock. Schmaltz.
Bock Bock.
Imperial American Bock aged in bourbon barrels.
That is very good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Right.
You can taste the bourbon.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
That can get you in trouble.
You know, it's funny, aging in bourbon barrels. There is a symbiotic relationship between distillers and brewers.
Yeah.
We had some Berkshire bourbon that was done in Samuel Adams barrels.
Yes.
And it was delicious. And you could actually, after the first sip, taste the Samuel Adams.
Yeah. And Jameson is doing that with Guinness now, too, because they're owned by the same company.
Yeah, they have the Caskmates, which is the Irish whiskey done in the Guinness barrels.
Yeah.
That's very good.
This is very good beer.
Now, what's funny too is you look at these are all amber, but Bock can really be any color. It's usually not very dark. It's not like a Schwarz beer. It's usually lighter, like a Helles Bock, or the My Bocks are usually lighter too.
Yeah.
But it sort of runs the gamut in color, and Doppelbocks are usually darker.
And what's the alcohol in this?
9.5%.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Let's go back to the phones while I can press the button. Marta in Skanivas. Marta, you're on.
Hey, guys. About 40 years ago, I was stuck in the Warsaw, Poland airport, and the only thing they had cold to drink was something that they called piwo dla karmiących matek, which means beer for nursing mothers.
Oh.
Beer for nursing mothers.
And it was delicious. It was dark. It was sort of sweet, and I think there was honey in it, but I wouldn't swear to it because I was only 17 at the time and probably shouldn't have been drinking it at all. But I was wondering if you've ever heard of anything like that, or anybody here is making, not necessarily nursing mothers, but a honey beer.
Well, there's historically always been a tie between beer and medicine, and you see it really even going back into the 18th century of this, you know, beer is good for you, beer is pure, beer is. And you used to see advertisements of children drinking beer.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't that long ago that it would not have been uncommon to give children small beer or table beer.
I mean, there still is today the anecdotal evidence that, or at least word on the street among mothers, that a little beer helps the milk come in.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was the principle, either that or mom wanted beer and there wasn't any getting around it in this way. It felt bitter.
Well,
a
loophole.
A crying baby, you know,
Here. Have some.
But, you know, beer throughout history, and we see it in New York, too, going back to the early Dutch. You know, the first brewery in New York was built, it's not really a brewery, it's a brew house built on the southern tip of Manhattan in 1614-ish. Because Adrian Bloch's ship, he's an explorer, his ship burns. So they keep malt and hops on board so that they can make beer in case there's an emergency, because it's in the wintertime, you don't have any game, you don't have any vegetables.
Right.
And you can do exactly like the Polaner monks and
just live on beer.
Live on beer.
It's always safer than the water. But as far as you know, nobody's making anything, not necessarily, like I said, marketed to mothers, but it just was delicious, and I don't have any plans to go back to Poland.
Part of your question was about honey beer.
Yeah.
And you have there are some good honey beers.
Sure. And there's mead too. You know, mead is basically a beer like wine made out of honey.
And I don't know if the labeling was so strict that they would have differentiated between mead and beer. But in any case, that's good to know. Any brands you want to recommend? The honey beer.
Joe Donahue.
No, all the ones I know are Kraft, and I don't know. I don't remember who.
Yeah, I mean.
Doesn't Dundee make a honey?
That's
kind of
Genesee
a mass
product,
mass produced.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I'll just keep my eye out. That's cool. Now, a quick question. I was just reading a mystery novel that I really like, and the detective refers to, I just got a case of Falstaff on eBay because they stopped making it. You want some? It's the last case. Now, I'm sorry Falstaff is gone, but B, isn't it risky to buy beer via mail?
Well, I mean, Falstaff's been gone for probably 50 years, so I think it's more risky to drink the beer that you bought on eBay, Because I don't know when Falstaff went out of business. Actually, it was probably later. It was probably in the 70s that they went out of business.
Marta, I got to say, two great questions. One about nursing mothers drinking beer, yeah, and then about Falstaff beer. You really have brought something to the table today.
I mean, if you're 21, you can buy beer on the internet.
Yeah, but I just didn't sound like a good idea.
No,
anyway.
No.
Well, they're probably not drinking it. They're right. Just putting it on the
hey, Marta, thanks
on the
for
bar
the call.
Shelf.
Say goodbye.
Bye. 800-348-2551. Nick in Saugerties. Nick, you're on.
Yeah, earlier you guys were talking about how you juggle beer.
Huh?
Yeah, the trick is alcohol's got a significantly lower boiling point than water. So what you do is you bring the beer to about 173 degrees and you keep it there for up to about 30 minutes and you'll bring most down to about 0.5%.
There you go. Well, thanks, Nick.
There you go.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call. Over to Cliff in Kingston. Cliff, you're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
My question was about why beers like Beck's and St. Paul Girls. I always like the dark beers, but whenever I've had either one, they've always had like a metallic, like the keg was turning into rust, had like a metallic aftertaste.
Bottled or keg?
Bottled.
Yeah, you know, Cliff, I'm with you on this, and I think it might just be our tastes, or maybe it's the green bottles.
Well, the green bottles have a lot to do with it. Green bottle lets in a lot of, it's light, and light struck beer can have some pretty funky flavors. The same
Heineken,
chemical.
The regular Heinekens and Amstels always smelled like skunk water, but
right.
Yeah.
And the same
with the
chemical
dark Heineken, you love the malt. You don't have any skunk.
Yeah, the same chemicals that make a skunk stink are being formed inside the bottle. The changes in temperature, too, that has a lot to do with it.
There's a local brewer here, and you can see the beehives on top of, like, a semi-a reefer. That's Keegan Ales. They have, like, their Super Kitty.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They use the honey for that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
great. They have their own bees.
Their mother's milk. That's good.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff. We appreciate the call.
And Joe Mama's milk.
Have a good one. Let's go over to line four and Sean and Kinderhook. Sean.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, I wanted to ask you guys, have you ever tried Utica Club?
Haha, Utica Club.
Yeah. I mean, we're drinking Jenny Bock. Of course we tried Utica Club.
That's so funny because I tried it when I was out in Old Forge, and I was like, it tastes like Jenny. It's crazy.
I think it's got more corn in it than Jenny does. It's an adjunct beer, and, you know, it's actually Utica Club started during Prohibition as a soda line, and then they continued it. They continued that name after Prohibition, and it really was, you know, it was funny because when I was out there talking to those guys, I was talking about the loss of ale after Prohibition versus lager brewing. You know, one's more of a British brewing tradition versus a German brewing tradition. And the narrative that we've always heard is that lager killed ale, and it wasn't, you know, ale breweries didn't make ale after Prohibition. And that's really not the case. There was a lot of places that were making porters and IPAs. And
Ballantine.
Yeah. I mean, wow, Ballantine was a huge, huge company, huge brewery, and that's all basically all they made was ale.
Hey, Sean, thanks a lot. We're about out of time here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go over quickly to line two, Virginia and Del Mar. Virginia.
Hi, this is in response to nursing mothers and drinking beer.
Yes.
Now, in the 50s, yes, that was something that was suggested to relax the mother, vitamin B, it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
But then fetal alcohol syndrome became evident, and the thrust, especially in the northeast of our country, they're suggesting that nursing women, pregnant women, really imbibe no alcohol
at
all.
Yes, I've heard that.
So I just want to put that out there in case anyone was anticipating a nice beer. You're making it sound so tasty. But I think it's best for nursing and pregnant women to avoid alcohol at all costs.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot. Fetal alcohol syndrome, of course, would theoretically stop when the fetus stops being a fetus.
Yeah.
But
no good.
Obviously,
really,
we get the point and the medical information, and that was great. So, Craig, what's next for you?
More research.
What do you
really
mean?
More research.
Is this considered research?
This is all research.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Do you write this off on your taxes?
Maybe. No, I don't, actually. This was my gift to you.
Hey, you know, it was nice to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Are you working on another book?
We are, like I said, we're doing research. We're actually going to start expanding into the rest of New York and looking at what's happening in New York City.
Interesting.
And Western New York and the lager brewers and stuff. So Al and I, Al is my writing partner and research partner, and he and I have, we're a ways away from a book, but we're trying to figure out the rest of the story in New York.
Well, awfully nice to have you here, and thanks for bringing all the tasty stuff. Joe Donahue, thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
You know what?
Very nice of you.
You didn't have to work this extra hour,
but
you did. We appreciate it. Just for that, I'll be on the panel in 2019. Okay. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Curran Compliance Services, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota. Compliance consultants to the life insurance industry, announcing a symposium in Albany, June 22nd through 24th. CurranCompliance.com. Thanks again to Craig Gravina for being here, and Joe Donahue, and to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Barb King took your calls. Our producer, Jessica Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk will be in the big chair on Monday for a Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for news.